extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
From New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time, presented by AT&T 5G. I am Andrew Wiebe with my partners in soccer, the one, the only, the living mime, Charlie Davies. You know what I'm talking about if you're watching on YouTube right now. And an honest man, David Goss. He put his hand up into the screen, into the shot as we were doing the pre-show meeting, and I saw the ring. This man is married. How many Rings times culture, was he married baby. Last weekend? Like 3 to 4 times. I don't know. Many, many times.
Yeah.
Multiple ceremonies, multiple parties, just one pickup game. David Goss, what's up, man? How's it feel?
It feels good. I've been on cloud nine the last week. We had a great series of events. It's because I'm married now. My wife. To an event planner. So we had a series of events. All of them went great. It was a lot of fun. The weather held up. Like, it was cool on the day we got married outside. So I wasn't sweating bullets.
Which is so Dave.
Divine intervention.
The recap of his marriage is about what the weather was like and how it affected his sweat patterns.
But I will tell you this. We had a ceremony in a temple on Thursday, and we wrote vows together for that we both read the same thing. And then on Saturday, we read separate vows. And we were writing our vows together, and we put together a joke line. My wife, again, just got to keep remembering that, she loves Hallmark movies. So we were like, we'll make every day feel like a Hallmark movie. And then we had to figure out my thing. And she was like, let's say the Knicks win the championship. And I was like, I don't want to be the sports guy. I don't want to go with the sports thing. My rabbi did a 12-minute speech about the most important players on a soccer field and how it relates to marriage and a good relationship. So I'm officially the sports guy, and there's not
really yeah, you weaved it all in. It's perfect. It's perfect. Yeah. By the way, I was listening to MLS Today. Everybody should do that live on Twitter Spaces, MLS Today podcast feed. And your buzzer went off like a million times, and I can only assume that is all the gifts flooding in. Mm-hmm. I would ask you this because I haven't yet. I didn't check to see if you have a registry. I've been
nice.
Like, you know,
classic Wiebe.
I know. I've been mourning my inability to actually attend said wedding. For those of you wondering, Dave did this on short notice. Let's just say, if I was going to get a wedding present for you and all Megan's friends, owner, captain, and most important player, Megan, what should I get?
A trip to Hawaii. I can answer that question.
Oh, whoa, yeah.
Okay, like,
yeah. Turns out Charlie had the answer in his back pocket. Let's be real here.
Yeah, Charlie's got, you know, he's got the wood grain. He's got his, you know, his gardeners out back. He's in a different budgetary, you know, like, level.
Charlie's like, call up my private jet guy. He'll set you up with a deal. Right. We're talking 12% off. It's basically free.
He's in DP zone. Like, I'm just trying to get on the senior roster here. You know what I mean? Like, it's a different life.
We can find something good for you, I'm sure. Most of it's been bought because we don't need anything because we live in a jail cell of an apartment in New York City and we can't fit anything. And people are like, we want to buy you an item. What do you want? And we're like, nothing, kind of.
Well, okay, I don't know what happened there, but right as you were about to name what I could possibly give you as a wedding present, everything cut out. Technology just went kaput. So look, we'll take this offline.
For sure.
We'll figure this out at a later date. Big weekend coming up here, but I mean, more important weekend in the Extra Time family. Last weekend, congratulations, Dave. Super happy Thank for you, man. Super happy for Megan. Is she marrying Pipa or Gonzalo?
It's a great question.
I don't know. Like, more of a creator or more of sort of like the final product guy? Like, you're wearing the pink right now. So.
It depends on how I wake up each day, what I'm feeling, what mood I'm in, if I'm going to be the one who puts it on the plate or if I'm the one who's eating the full meal.
Eating.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's a good question to ask every single day of your long, healthy, and fruitful marriage. Let's jump into it. Coming up today from the AT&T 5G virtual studios. First of all, I would call you back. You probably saw it in the podcast feed. Maybe you saw it on YouTube. On Wednesday, released about 55 minutes with Greg Berhalter. We went to Chicago to do that interview, Anders and I. Go check it out. He sort of takes you into where his mind is ahead of September, but in a bigger since ahead of the World Cup in Qatar. What are the things he's thinking about from a scouting and preparation perspective? The number nine position from Christian Pulisic, from Dest, from others in sort of shaky club situations, though Pulisic has resolved itself a little bit, at least a fresh start since I talked to Greg. A lot of stuff in that interview. Let us know what you think. Hit us up, whether it be on the text line or email or on Twitter.
I don't want to sidebar us too much, but I do have to ask, do we know what loyalties Greg Berhalter has in baseball? Because he's very baseball adjacent, right? I think his godfather was a professional baseball player. He was at the MLB.
Carl Yastrzemski, right. Too. Yeah, yeah. Like any.
But he was wearing the Yankees.
That's what I'm saying. And then he went to Citi Field for the NYCFC game right after that last night. So I'm just trying to figure out, do we know?
Does that jive in New England, Charlie? Yastrzemski bloodline and then Yankees jersey?
Yeah, no, that doesn't jive.
But he is a New Yorker, I think.
He has a parent from New York. So I think he's just on a tour. let him live.
This is political, man. This is political. Whatever town you go into, like you know and you love that town. Yeah. It was a good interview, though. Go check that out as well. We have gotten this far, probably too far, Orlando City fans are saying, without saying that Orlando City are 2022 U.S. Open Cup champions. 3-0 victors against Sacramento Republic, a home game for Orlando. That's basically how they won this thing. That's sort of the story of this competition for most champions. Facundo Torres makes himself a legend. Benji Michel is the game changer off the bench for Oscar Pereja. And you had everything in this one, including the late drama, but also Spygate ahead of time, Sacramento Republic training at a public park, and apparently, you know, reportedly, allegedly, I'm going to put all the different qualifiers in here, and Orlando City first team member was there and then didn't want to leave. Now, it is a public park, so it's not, you know, like, I got to just say that.
It's like, let's be real. Like, trying to blow up these stories, seriously. I mean, when I read that, I was like, are we really talking about spying on a team the day before?
Spoken like a true New Englander.
Stop. He's like, look, if Taro FC can do it in CCL, sure. Like anybody can do this. Like, not a big deal here. Is it spying, though, if like they see you and you're talking and they're like asking you to leave? That's not technically spying, right? Oh, like it's a public interaction. I'm saying, like, it's not like you were up there and like in disguise. I don't know. I said I had all the qualifiers. I wasn't there. I don't know what happened. I have no idea what happened.
Just to put it in perspective, typically the day before a game in training, you do 5v2s. Maybe you do a walkthrough, 11v11, but it's a walkthrough. And possibly set pieces. Given that there's someone there, you're in a public spot, you probably aren't going to do any of your crazy set pieces or any of that. It's literally just a walkthrough, get some stretching, get your mind right, have an idea of where everyone is, you're starting 11 possibly, and that's it. So how much of a difference is that going to make for Orlando City playing at home versus Sacramento? So that's my point.
There was a nice little routine from Sacramento that almost resulted in a goal on sort of a, you know, fake set play where they have like, oh, faking, are you taking, am I taking, back off, whip it in, then there was the collision. So they hid that one away. It almost worked. But we started with Spygate. We shouldn't have done that. Let's jump into it. Orlando City, 3-0. I thought the first half was disappointing for Orlando, but maybe that's just a final, Dave.
I mean, they
seemed a little bit slow to connect. They didn't have like sort of a cutting edge and aggression. It didn't seem like they were like, hey, this is our game. We're going to go out and win it. It was sort
of
like
a lot of this
treading water until the second
half. I heard a lot of this. I don't know that I totally agree. I watched it back again this morning. They were dominant in the first half. There was no point in which Sacramento, well, that's not true. Sacramento had a 5 or so minute stretch. But throughout the first 45 minutes, Sacramento did not control the game. And it was the game state we always knew it was going to be. Sacramento's plays 5 in the back. They were going to sit fairly deep in this game. Orlando somewhat struggles at breaking teams down in the final third. And I think that's the reality you saw. Any half chance Orlando had to get in transition, I thought they were dangerous. And in general, I kind of felt like the longer this game went, Orlando had more pieces to change the game. They had more depth to manage it. They had the crowd behind them. that entire time. They also have a comfort in late games, right? They've won four straight games. Almost all of them are on stoppage time winners. The penalty kick shootouts in the playoffs, in the Open Cup, the goal against Nashville in the Open Cup, like that's sort of their bread and butter. And so while I can understand the idea, which is, well, they're a lower division team, come out, put your foot on the throat and just end all hope, I don't think that was ever really the way the game was going to play out. And then Oscar Pereja found his moment to say, all right, let's press a little bit higher. Let's do it with Benji Michel as fresh legs up top. And that was the difference. But I don't know that that difference happens if they're pressing out the gate the first minute, because then Sacramento is just going to go long. And I don't know that it ever really opens up that opportunity to create what was the first goal.
I think I agree with you. And I think maybe that this isn't, and look, Oscar talked about it in my interview with him on Tuesday's show, of maybe some of the, I don't know, some of the like residuals of wanting and expecting more from this Orlando team than we've gotten this year. And he sort of admitted to that. He's like, yeah, look, we've been sort of looking for it, especially in the sense of like, how do we create goal scoring opportunities from open play? How do we be dynamic? And look, I don't think they were in the first half. I agree with you that they were dominant. And I also agree that opening it up for Sacramento to have like a route one opportunity to go at goal is not the way, because Sacramento, when it came to that time to have, okay, you need that little bit of extra quality. You need the touch into the right spot. You need the pass with the right weight. You need to understand how the game is flowing. You need the right run. They didn't have that in this game. And like, you know, in the end, Facundo Torres did. Facundo Torres cost more than like multiple years budget player-wise for Sacramento. Just his transfer fee, let alone all the other pieces on Orlando. So as Todd Donovan said, Orlando were the big favorite, even if we weren't sort of saying that over and over and over and pounding that drum. So they secured it. And I heard a lot of people say, hey, it's the first trophy in club history. And I got a little bit of a bone to pick with that. It is not the first trophy in club history. It's the first MLS trophy. And I know that counts. That matters. I see you like shaking your head. But they had a ton of USL success. And I think that's maybe where this hunger from the fan base has come from, right? They became accustomed to that level of success. And they just have never been able to not just accomplish it in MLS, but sort of get close to it. And now they have it. They have this trophy that puts them in CCL. It's Orlando and Vancouver so far. We'll get to that in a second, but I want to go through some fan reaction and then get your thoughts on the game.
Can I just say one quick thing, which is I hadn't really thought about it this way until the game, which was I thought a lot of this game played out similar to the San Jose and SKC games. And I didn't really put it together that the three teams that Sacramento beat, none of them might make the playoffs. For sure, San Jose and SKC won't. The mistakes that Casey made that they took advantage of, those mistakes were there in the SKC game, right? Russell goes wide. Shelton made a different run. Like, all of those chances existed, and SKC couldn't take advantage. And obviously, being on the road was a little different as well. This Orlando was the best team that Sacramento faced, and they played a similar game. It was a similar game state, and then they lost 3-0, and I think wasn't apparent to me until towards the end, where you're like, this is a different level than what it's been so far.
So Brandon Bayless hit us up, said, fantastic to see Benji, the heart of the club, come in and provide the physical and emotional spark to create the chances for Facu to secure the first trophy. You could feel it coming when he came on. So Benji draws a PK. He has the nice little weighted ball into Facundo for the first goal that sort of sets things on the right path for Orlando. And then his finish for the third was incredible. So measured, so calm, like didn't feel like he had to smash it, just placed it. Then he did the sleeping, the Seth Curry celebration, scale of 1 to 10, Charlie, on the celebration scale to ice a cup win. Where's that one land for you?
I give it a 9.
Solid 9.
Solid 9.
That's a big grade. We've got people sending in photos of their kids celebrating.
Wasn't it the Malik Foster celebration?
Because you're married and I'm a dad, but
he did the full flip into the Steph Curry.
Oh, I didn't. I must have missed
it. They cut away from it, but you see him go up for it, and then you sort of see him land, which feels oddly like angry about a thing that doesn't affect you. I'm pretty sure it was the exact Malik Foster celebration to the goal, but I could be wrong.
Brandon Bayless also hit us up, showed us his kid's face, brought his kid to the game. What a wonderful moment for them. Tim from UConn, I'm crying at home in Connecticut. My best friend just called me crying from the stadium. This is the best. I approve of all instances of crying and big life moments. Congratulations, Tim. Alex Brandt, we have been the cardiac cats all season long, but we finally dug deep, found ourselves, and we took the cup and brought it to the home, to the city of beautiful. Next up, MLS Cup, we are coming for you. Those are the confidence is flowing. You know, like you win a cup, yeah. You're like, we're getting all of them. Why couldn't
Slow
we get
down.
All these cups? It's us, baby. It's us. Jared Quackenbush, which Quackenbush remains one of the best last names I've ever read out loud on this show. It's everything. I remember growing up and not being able to watch soccer on TV. I became an Orlando supporter since the USL days. I was at the stadium, groundbreaking. Now this, it's all full circle. This is what dreams are made of. Eric Schroom, a lot of cardiac references here. Massive cathartic moment for us. It's been a long slog of difficult years, and this feels like we've made a huge step from Orlando to just Orlando. Watch out for us. And then Spot says probably his favorite moment in person in sports ever. Love the heart and the fight and the resiliency of the club. And then Daniel Cooley hits us right where it hurts. How many spots y'all going to drop us in the power rankings? So, Charlie, what'd you think of this game and this win for Orlando? What does this mean for the club, their first MLS trophy?
Well, it's massive because, you know, I don't think they've had the best of seasons, and they're still fifth place in the Eastern Conference, which is pretty damn good with two games
with,
in hand
with games
on
in
top
hand,
of
yeah.
that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I know for Oscar Pereira, it was more about winning a trophy. Because you got to the MLS Cup, the MLS's back final, which was amazing. And I think that was the statement game in the statement tournament for this team to say, hey, this is a new chapter. We're going to be competing. We're going for trophies. But you still need to get that trophy. Now they finally have that trophy that they can say, hey, let's build off of this legacy. We get a chance to play in CONCACAF Champions League next year. It's massive for the club, and it's massive for Oscar Pereira, because now you can go to the owners and say, next step is MLS Cup. So let's invest in this team. Get me some big players. Let me go out and get some guys. Let me identify some talented players, and let's go get them. Let's push on. We want to compete in CCL. We want to compete for MLS Cup. So I love it. And it's fully deserved. That community supports. I don't think there's ever a doubt how much they support this team. So I've always enjoyed going to those games. I'm like, man, Orlando gets it. These fans support this team, and you can feel it. So well deserved, and I hope that they go out and start to really excel and get some big time.
What
players.
You just said, Charlie, was sort of what me and Susanna dug in on MLS today, which is like, this club has every element to be a super club in MLS. They just need to push. And Facundo Torres feels like that already, right? Like, Kaká was a big deal, but the way they signed Facundo Torres at the number and his profile, I mean, he could be a 22-year-old at the World Cup for Uruguay. Like, that's all new, but it's not all of it. But the market, the stadium, the facility, the academy now, as well as the relevance that they have and the relevance that they could have in the region because of the background that you have in Orlando across all of South America and Central America. Like, this can be one of the big clubs in Major League Soccer. They just need to tap into that. And so to win a trophy this year, as Charlie said, to prove it, but to win a trophy before you're ready and then be able to say, now, proof of concept and proof of what it'll mean, this is the roadmap to taking it to the next step, feels just massive for them.
I think the question has been, you know, look, can Oscar take them to that next step too? I truly think that's been a question. And you guys mentioned the support, and I completely agree with you, but I'd also add that sort of the outward support, the fire that we've seen from the supporters section, the packed house that we've seen for so long in this league from Orlando, it waned a little bit. Like, there was maybe a little bit of doubt creeping in, I think, in the fan base, and maybe a little bit of doubt in what the future was going to be with Oscar. And I think this was as big a win as it was for Orlando City, the club. I think it was just as big for Oscar Pereja to sort of reinforce that he is the right guy for this job. And they've gone through a lot this year, and they're still in a good spot. I mean, Antonio Carlos, not many teams can lose their best center back and be in this position. You know, Gaston Jimenez is signed to be a difference maker and get some. He's injured the game before he comes. Pato goes down. You know, I don't think Erkankara has lived up necessarily to his potential. Facundo Torres is starting to, but you basically turned over a roster from Nani and Daryl Dike, as Oscar said, and the expectations remained like, you're going to go compete for trophies, and you've never done it in MLS. So I think that this win, as you guys said, hopefully it's that launching point. You know, it's sort of a reiteration of the culture, of the coaching staff, of the players that are there, but also sort of a thought of like, hey, the future can be bigger. Like we can, if we find a little consistency in the league, why couldn't we go try to win MLS Cup this year? Why can't next year be a time where we look at ourselves and say, hey, instead of being sort of middle of the pack, we want to be that super club that you're talking about, Dave. We want to be one of those teams that people look at and say, that's a Shield contender. Or just in more simple terms, that's one of the best teams in the league. They still have a lot to do to get to that point, I think, in terms of style of play, consistency, continuity. But some of that stuff was out of Oscar's control this year. So I thought in this big leverage moment, and not just in this singular moment, but also in the four games leading up to it when their playoffs lives were on the line, I think it's a huge sign for the club of like, hey, when it, we were sort of in a little bit of a, you know, we're on the precipice, like on the brink here of this being a super disappointing season, to flip that script and say, hey, hold on here. We got games in hand. We could jump up to third in the East if we win our games in hand. It's not going to be easy. They're going to Philly, I think, this weekend. So, you know, on the backs of this huge, you know, emotional and like adrenaline rush. Like, we can do that. We have that potential. Facundo Torres can be that difference maker, the guy that we paid all those millions of dollars for. What can Gaston Jimenez be in the future? Can Eric Ankara be that player? We have a core in midfield, especially with Cesar Araujo, that we think can carry this team into this next era, and we're seeing growth out of all those players. So in a lot of ways, I felt like there was big pressure on Orlando in this game. To deliver.
They're playing the USL side.
And they hadn't done that so far in their MLS existence. And so I think just that idea of like, when it push comes to shove, we delivered, that level of belief, that reinforcement, that sign to their supporters, to the city, you can't replicate it. And you don't get another opportunity, and they don't come along often. So to take advantage of it, I thought was huge. I also just want to say kudos to Sacramento. I mean, you saw the supporters that were there. You saw Jordan Angeli, big friend of the show, out in Sacramento, and they had like 6,000 people at a watch party together just to make this run.
Incredible.
Is really, really cool. I mean, Charleston Battery's the last non-MLS team to make a final, and of course they weren't able to get the job done. I believe against DC United, if I remember right. But to get to this point. Yeah, for Sacramento, after what they've been through as a club in recent history, is really, really special as well. Any final thoughts on the game itself, on what it means? We can hit CCL after that, and like what it means for Orlando going into that competition, and who else we might want to see in next year's Champions League. But any sort of like bows you want to put on?
I would just say on the Sacramento side, I think to me the conversation should shift in the breadth of the game in this country, where it used to be there's so many players that get missed or overlooked. I don't think that's the conversation anymore. I think the conversation is there's so many talented players that there needs to be more space for them to play. When I look at this Sacramento team, I don't look at it and say, oh, look at what Nashville made a mistake with Matt LaGrassa, San Jose with Luis Felipe, although I do say that about him, Connor Donovan, Jack Kerr, all these players that were in MLS setups. It's not that MLS team is doing mistakes, it's that there's that much talent. Like, they came out of clubs where other players are good, and they are great players. And they, Douglas Martinez plays for his national team, right? Malik Foster plays for his national team in CONCACAF. Like, there's just a ton of talent in the region and in the country. And so I think that's what's exciting for me. And obviously I cover USL pretty consistently. And when you look at the top teams like Memphis and New Mexico and all these clubs that are doing really well, like, there's just good players all over, and there's enough to fill it out. And I think the conversation should change from these are the players who don't get the opportunity and get missed to there's just a lot of good players now, and everyone's taught better from a young age, and the pipelines are better, and there's just talent all over. And I think even as MLS continues to grow, I think we'll still see runs like this because there's more players that are sticking around longer as well. So it's not just they're talented, but they're young. It's, you know, you look at this team, obviously Roro Lopez, but everyone in this team for Sacramento was an experienced player who has been there before and understood how to handle some of these big moments.
How much did USL pay you to plug them like that?
Oh, can I? The USL hasn't paid me, but if they'd like to. I'll send the Venmo out. I'll flip that on the
Charlie, you're wearing a Revs jersey right now, the club that literally pays you week in and week out.
Kick childhood.
Well, respect for that.
Wow.
That is
why. Look, I agree with the messaging here. Mr. High Road, Mr. Man's a politician. Man's a politician. I'll extend that to markets and cities too. You know, you're talking about players. There are more than however many cities are going to be in MLS in the long run that have an appetite for, that have the talent base to have academies that produce professional players, that have the capability for supporters to come out and make a club big. And obviously Sacramento is leading that charge in a lot of ways. Maybe talk to Todd Donovan. They're still building the stadium on the site that they had for MLS. They are still going to have what amounts to a class venue for people to go experience the professional game. They're still going to be in a talent-rich area of Northern California. They're still going to invest and to be competitive in USL Championship, which is an extremely competitive league. Like that is still going to be a thriving, healthy club ingrained in its community, regardless of what league it is competing in. So I would extend your sort of player commentary to that as well. But look, they're not the champions. That's Orlando City. Orlando City go to the CONCACAF Champions League for next year. The Canadian Championship was won by the Whitecaps. So you have Whitecaps, Orlando City. We have a Supporters Shield winner that'll get in. So it'll either be Philly or LAFC, it feels like. And then you'll have the opposite East or West Conference champs. So that, in a positive development here, that's probably either the other one. It's either Philly or LAFC. And then you'll have MLS Cup. Who would you want that fifth to be? Let's just assume that Philly and LAFC are going to get in based on Supporters Shield and then winning.
Off. This is a good idea.
I specialize in that. So I'm jacked for Philly to get in. I think that's, given the project that they have and sort of where the project is, Philly is that's super exciting. I hope that Gareth Bale sticks around to play in CONCACAF Champions League next year, but who knows what will happen with that. But LAFC will still have an incredibly talented, deep team that has the capability of winning the thing. Who would you want that fifth team to be? And maybe I guess you can't divorce it from the idea of winning MLS Cup. So that goes to, as you said, pissing people off.
Can I just ask, are we allowed to pick Montreal? Because I don't believe they can qualify in this route this year still.
I don't think they
They're
can.
They're going to be without Mihailovic, so it's not the same either.
And maybe Kone as well.
Right.
It could be Montreal. Let's just open it up, and there's no rules to this. It's just the fifth team you would want to see in CCL, regardless of how exactly they would qualify, even though that doesn't really work. So with Tati, it would have been NYCFC trying to go back to it for me, but now it's not. They're just sort of in a moment where it doesn't feel. Seattle's probably going to Club World Cup, and they already did it. So
I'm gonna go down the list. I'm gonna say Columbus. I'd love to see Cucho and Zelarayan in CCL. They got short shrift a little the first time. Because if you remember what Zelarayan got, the soft yellow, he got suspended. I think Aiden Morris tore his ACL in the game. And I thought they were still better than Monterrey. So I'd love to see Cucho and Zelarayan do their thing.
Yeah. I mean, for me, if it's not since you're the crew, I'd probably say Nashville. I'd want to see Nashville in CCL.
I like that.
Just to see, okay, one amazing stadium, right? Brand new stadium. But the different types of styles that they'll play against in CCL and how that compares with how they set up now, with Hani Mukhtar really being their go-to guy and really the only guy to unlock teams. If certain teams play a certain style and take that away, or make it much more difficult, how do they adjust? How do they adapt? I would love to see probably Nashville or the crew. I mean, the crew have only lost two games since May 21st. Two games, that's it.
Since he's only lost one in their last 16. I'm just throwing it out there. Since he fans would remind you of that. We'll talk about that more later.
That's why I brought them up. Since your crew or Nashville.
I like Nashville because I think against Liga MX, who generally are going to have more of the ball, though not universally against MLS teams. That sort of like counterattacking style of play, and Hani could be just a devastating presence. I think Austin would be fun too, just because I think every game would be a party. And I think Austin just plays open games, so you're talking about some real CCL fever going down. And Driussi in that, and Diego Fagundes, and if Rigoni is, I don't know, if he can make a step into like true DP difference maker next year whenever he gets settled.
Austin's a fun one, teams. Similar, as you said, but also to what Charlie said of like watching them, they're going to play their style, right? Watching that be affected and how it stands up against another opponent. I would say Dallas. I don't believe Jesus Ferreira will be on the team when CCL starts next year.
Oh, really?
Yeah. The guy's going to push for Golden Boot and play and start in a World Cup at this age. I would be surprised if he is, if you had him, Paul Arriola,
Paxton.
It'd
probably be a summer transfer, though.
Not necessarily. I think there's going to be a lot of January stuff because of the World Cup happening in November. I think it's going to be a weird year. But you could be right.
We'll see. Teams without a trophy, just want to name this list off to remind everybody who doesn't have one is still trying to get one. Orlando take themselves off that list, at least from an MLS perspective. Again, they won in USL twice. Austin, Minnesota, Cincy, Charlotte, Nashville, and Miami. Those are remaining teams without a trophy.
So it's pretty much like expansion order.
It's like
outside of Atlanta came in with Minnesota, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All right, let's talk Cincy. The other game on Wednesday night, I'm going to be perfectly honest. I did not watch a second of this game other than the highlights because I was watching a final. That's, you know, on the hierarchy of matches to watch, the final is always going to be on top. A 1-1 draw at Citi Field. Greg Berhalter was there to watch this one. NYCFC with Thiago Martins. I mean,
Mets.
What an own goal that was. That was an incredible 40-yard own goal.
Yikes.
And then Thiago Martins gets the red card for Dogzo later on. It was not his night in a lot of ways. But it was yet another draw for Cincy. Michael Rice says, can Cincy draw their way to the playoffs? Nathan Hale says, one loss in the last 16 ain't too shabby. We can. Do you want, if you'd like to play Narco, now, Dave, you could do. I saw that. Did not that we have to like beat the wedding talk into a pulp, but I did see Ben Bear thoroughly enjoying the playing of that at your wedding dance. So that was a pretty incredible moment. Who was this worse for, NYCFC or Cincy? Or was it, this one feels like both sides like look at each other and go, meh, okay. Like no, NYCFC beat them down as far as XG and chance creation.
This is New York City FC. This is their problem. I mean, and playing in this 3-4-3 with Nick Cushing, and you know, I called it last week when the New York City FC played the Revs. You cannot line up Tavon Gray on the left side in a 3-4-3 and expect what to get a result. I mean, it was not that. It was you didn't have Thiago Martins. I know he had a number of injuries. Alexander Kayans, but you started Acevedo and Hack. And Hack and Acevedo are not two guys who are going to be able to win the ball and keep possession. Yes, Acevedo can break up plays, but with the ball at his feet, both of them, they struggled. And they struggled to get Justin Hack struggled to get around the pitch. I just think that he's not setting up this team to win games, to be successful. So for me, when I'm watching them play, I'm like, there's a lot left to be desired because they leave points on the board. They're not playing to their strengths. They're not fluid. And you can't play a back three of Thiago Martins, Chanot, and Kayans. Chanot and Kayans, that's the best partnership. Stick with that right now. That is the best. I don't think Thiago Martins has been better than either of those two combined. Maybe individually at times you could say, okay, he looks a little bit better than Chanot at times. But as a partnership, as a pair, Chanot and Kayans are the best center back pair because of their understanding with Sean Johnson. And that is taking away that own goal pass in that match yesterday. Like, take that out of the equation. Look at the red card he received at the end of the game. There's just a number of things where I'm watching, I'm like, man, New York City FC, we all know they're good. All the talented players they have, when you talk about Max Morales and Santi Rodriguez, Pereira, Tyus Magno, Eber coming off the bench, they have talent. That's not the question. Here it's midfield, winning the balls, and then defensively, that back line, it's not in sync. For me, New York City FC are nowhere near playing to their potential. Cincinnati, you get a draw on the road, you're like, okay. Yeah.
Yeah,
it's a point on the road.
Can I tell you, since these form, as far as they have 12 draws this year, since Philly on 6/18, June 18th, draw, win, draw, 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 loss, draw, draw, win, two wins. That's a win against Philly too, by the way, which is pretty incredible. Draw, 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 win, draw. They have one loss in 16. This is like, I don't know what to make of this form for them. Just a bucket full of
draws. Yeah, I would say from a lot of the home ones have been from winning positions, which is a mistake, right? The away ones have been grinding out decent results. They don't beat themselves as much. I think Nuoboto is a huge part of that. I think Celentano is a big part of that as well compared to their past. And so I would argue they've had a decent amount of games. If they were an elite team in MLS or one of the contenders in the East, those results would not be the same. There are wins in there rather than, oh, they've pulled back losses to ties. It's been more wins to ties. But that's great for them compared to what their history is. Like, all of that is a win, and that is the first step. And there's clear flaws to the back line that need to be fixed, but you can only do so much in a short amount of time. And I do think Miazga is a part of it. So I think all of that's positive in general for FC Cincinnati, but it does put a situation in which there's a decent chance they don't make the playoffs in a year in which I believe they are one of the seven best teams in the Eastern Conference.
They have a winning record in 29 games. Just that sentence for Cincinnati. Yeah. 9 wins, 8 losses, 12 draws. Just that. The negative one goal differential, but we'll let that slide. Just that is a massive win for them. But if they could have just got 2 wins from those winning positions at home, they would be...
But
they would be right there to play a game at home in the playoffs.
They have a big win against the Union amongst those draws. That for me is also a statement win. They added Miazga, which I think is definitely 100% going to help them at being a competitive team. I expect them to be in the playoffs.
50-50 says 538.
I expect them to be in the playoffs.
I want them to be in the playoffs. I think the progress they've made, I just think as an I'm there for entertainment. I think they are, you know, you said they're among the best 7 teams in the East. I agree with that, Dave. I also think they're among the most entertaining teams in the entire league. And so when it comes to playoff time, I want to see them there. We'll talk more about 538 in the weekend here in just a second as we preview week 30. But we got to talk Joseph Martinez. Suspended for a week. All is not well in Atlanta. A lot coming out this morning as Gonzalo Pineda had a press conference. Word is that from Thiago Almada is that Joseph Martinez has apologized to his teammates, but not to Pineda. That's what Pineda says. But what would he be apologizing for, you might ask? The report from The Athletic was that after the game against the Timbers, right, on the weekend, Martinez walked into the visitors' locker room. Was it the Timbers? I don't know. Either way, they lost. He knocked over a catering table. This was the report. Let's see. Here was the quote here. Martinez knocks it all over and there's chicken and rice all over the locker room, said a source to Felipe Cardenas, who is a big friend of this show as well as the Power Rankings show. Apparently there was a confrontation between Pineda and Martinez. Now Pineda says that there was no physical altercation, but that's a lie. But it seems pretty clear that there was some sort of verbal altercation that happened between the two of them. Things have gone south, Charlie. They've been trending that way for a while.
Can I just add in here, because Anders just sent this to us. Pineda's Doug Roberson tweeted, Pineda was very diplomatic about Martinez, said he would welcome him back.
Yes. So
just throwing that in there.
Yeah, what are you going to, what's he going to, he's banned from the team? No, you can't do that. Then you risk losing the locker room already. So that, I don't take anything from that. What I will say, though, so I've been in these situations, when you see a player who's important to the team get in an argument with a coach, a verbal, I've seen physical altercations as well, that it usually stems from one, results, right? So you're looking at the results for Atlanta United. They're washed. Let's be real. They're washed. This is not the Atlanta United of 2018 when you have El Marone and a firing Joseph Martinez, and you're scared to play them. That when you're playing in Atlanta, you are on your heels, and you know you're going to be chasing the whole game. That is not the Atlanta United anymore. Put that put that away. For all the supporters out there, I know there's a lot of Atlanta United supporters, and I think you guys are awesome, but this is not the same team. Not at all. Jose Martinez is not the same player anymore. Sometimes that's tough to handle and adjust to. Now you throw in the results, but also his performances. He's frustrated because I've been there before, trying to come back from an injury and multiple injuries. You're trying to find your fitness and form. At the same time, you're trying to catch your old self, your old form. And in some cases, that's not possible. But you're still working toward it because you're saying, how close can I get? And I just feel like this organization has taken so many different twists and turns with different hires, different head coaches. Darren Eels, gone. And that was the centerpiece in the front office, gone. I just feel that this is going to take a while before we see Atlanta United competing at the top of the Eastern Conference. And this is one of those things where you're looking at a manager. This is a pivotal moment for the manager, Pineda, to say, okay, this is where I see our future and our path. And it's not the same as where you see the future and the path. And this is that point. This is that moment.
So is this, I mean,
this isn't Jose Martinez's team anymore. This is that point.
It can Jose Martinez stay on this team, or do they need to make that change?
I would say at this point, at the end of the season, I don't expect him to be with Atlanta United next year.
Let me ask you this, Charlie, or in this way, I guess to me, there's two ways that I'm seeing this. One is, can Joseph get back to who he was? Because that's not decided yet, right? He's still young enough to right. do it if it's physically possible. Do you think he can't be on this team whether he gets back or not? Or only if he doesn't get back to who he is that he can't? Because if he gets back to who he was, it is his team again, right?
Can he? And the other question I would say within that is, like, can he get back to that on this team? Like, is this the right environment for him to get back to that level if it's even possible?
Well, the proof and the evidence would tell you no at this point. And I think you're looking at everyone starting to shift that main focus to Thiago Almada and saying, Almada's the guy. Almada's a special talent. That's who we want to build this team around. The young player who we can sell to Europe for the next multi-million dollar fee. So Almada and Araujo are the two stars at the moment for this team that you say they can give us a chance to get back to an MLS Cup if we build around them and we make sure that they are in a position to succeed. And I don't think Jose Martinez fits into those plans at this moment.
I think you maybe have to ask yourself, even just with outside of the goals and the production side, which, you know, like the injury in 2020 was, you know, it was awful. He was 19, 31, and 27 goals. The years before that, he was the dude in MLS from a goal scoring perspective. We're like, he's going to set the records. He's going to blow this away. Like, what he's done is absurd. He's had a season of 12 last year, and he's got 8 and 22 this year. But he has definitely had issues with every coach Atlanta United have had. That includes Tata. And Tata admitted that during the time. He's like, I love him. He's like a son to me, but like, are there sometimes issues? Like, yeah, the reporting has been that there have been sort of breaks with every coach. You can say that about Venezuela as well. There have been times sure. He hasn't been with Venezuela. I don't know who to put that on. I'm just saying that there has been sort of a history of conflict between Joseph and head coaches, whether that be Frank de Boer, whether that be Gabriel mm-hmm. Heinze, who suspended him as well, and now, of course, you know, Gonzalo Pineda. Is Joseph the problem? Like,
well, if Joseph is the problem, goals right. cover that problem up, right? You as long as you're producing, no matter who you are, where you are, what you do, I've seen it with my own damn eyes. If a striker is scoring goals, you get away with sometimes murder, but you can get away with anything. You can get away with things because they go, hey, at the end of the day, we're winning games and he's scoring goals. But this statement always remains true. As soon as a goal scorer stops scoring goals and the results stop coming, guess who the fingers get pointed at first? Guess who's not allowed to get away with what they were able to get away with first? That striker. And so that's the case. As soon as you stop producing, you can't do what you used to do. You can't get away with all those things.
Not, at that point, the headache is not justifiable.
Exactly. Yes.
So could we see Joseph's, like, okay, so I think his, if I remember right, his deal runs through next year.
Correct.
So there's not like a, hey, at the end of this year, there's an option, or there's a, you know, there's an easy sort of, you know, dust your hands off, go in different directions.
I would expect him to go if he can find another option, because I don't think he wants to be there at that point.
Okay. Do you think, I mean, like, South America will be an option for him, certainly. You'd think there'd be places that he could go to, you know, to play at a big club there, given his track record and his international profile. Do you think he could stay in MLS, Charlie, or do you think this is it for him in MLS if he indeed leaves at the end of the season?
I think there are a number of teams in MLS who would be willing to have Joseph Martinez and give it a shot. So think about teams that are missing that one goal scorer, who need someone who can just finish. You just supply him opportunities and you don't have to worry about it.
I
could see him going to another MLS team. I don't know what you would trade with 1 year left on his deal.
It feels like it wouldn't be the package that people would think for Joseph Martinez because of his injury, because of the contract, and also because it feels like it's going to be Atlanta half being like, let's get out of this. So that doesn't drive up the price. There are three teams that I've looked at. Surprisingly, a lot of the teams you'd think are like, oh, they're not going to go out and transfer a player like Joseph in. They have forwards like Jeremy Obobese, right? San Jose is not going to go get him. Lucci doesn't want to deal with this in year one. The ones that come to mind, an interesting one is Nashville. He would fit fairly cleanly in the way they play up top and the way they put crosses in. And again, he doesn't want to drop in and get the ball at his feet, and he's not going to change the game for you there. That one's interesting to me. RSL's interesting, even with the money they've given Wood and Rubin, because we don't know what they're going to look like as a transfer club, what type of spend.
Yeah, I would say RSL is a good.
And that would be one where it's like, if you want to stay in the U.S. and you want to stay in MLS, like, that's kind of an opportunity for them. Those are the first two that pop up. I said SKC on MLS today. I don't know.
Portland.
Portland.
Portland would be a great place for him to thrive.
Nizhgoda has not been it. Mora's been injured. They do like to play sort of on that when they're at the at their best. They do seem like a team that's going to play in that transition moment. And you would think there's a – and then you got – do you have Sebastian Blanco still and Joseph? That's two big high upside, high potential
– risk.
Not going to work out sort of situations. Nashville, does he mesh with sort of the culture that they've built there, given some of these issues? Is that something Gary Smith wants to deal with? I mean, look, I'm not saying here that, like, Joseph Martinez is a locker room cancer, but I am saying that you're bringing someone in who's been having these issues with his current club. I mean, that's not disputable. He's suspended for a week.
Man, I bet you the Chicago Fire wish they hadn't given up $1.2 million for Kasper Schmeichel last year.
And we can't gloss over the fact that if Atlanta do let him leave, who would come in to fill that void?
I mean,
they're not afraid to spend money. Yeah,
they need.
They're not. That's the lesser question to me. But the question is, like, can they hit on it?
We have to admit that Atlanta United the last few years have kind of been a train wreck. They have gone through way too many managers. There is no continuity to the roster. They have hit on very few of the transfers and moves they've made, and they've made a ton of them. And when you look, Joseph Martinez signed his contract extension in January of 2018. Sorry, 2019. 19.
Yep.
Yes. They came out of winning MLS Cup, being dominant, competing on all fronts, wanting to push for CCL, Tata, Almiron, Nagby, Parkhurst. That was the team he signed up for, and he knew it was going to change because we all knew Almiron was gone. And I think I still agree with the idea of giving him the contract, which was, okay, we brought in some young players. Some will leave and you will be sort of the core of our team. But it's not been what he was promised, probably. It probably wasn't the conversation they had of the support he'd have, of the way the team would be built. Charlie talked about goal scorers and the experience. This guy feeds on service. So as Joseph Martinez, you're looking around and saying, you guys said you wanted me here. Where's my service? Where has my help been? And it hasn't existed. The injury, I think, really, it just blows all of it up. I think it just put more of a strain on everything. But you always knew, as you said, he had issues with Tata. I think it's less that he has issues. I think it's that he's emotional. Yeah. He's an emotional player. He's an emotional person. The emotion is what drives him. So you take it good and bad there. And there's, you know, some players out there that you wish were more emotional. They could be better versions of themselves. Joseph has tapped into that. It's just probably not at this point what anyone thought it was going to look like if you looked into the future when he signed the contract and say, what is 2022 going to be like?
Speaking of Joseph, he was stumping for an extension as recently as before this season. Publicly, one of the quotes he had then was, I want to die here. This is my home. I'll be here infinitely, which is just a hell of a quote, like an incredible thing to say. And the connection he has with the fans, I don't think you can necessarily, you can't overstate that. And that's why you decide to build around a guy like Joseph outside of the insane goal form, is that he sort of represented the heart and soul of the club. And maybe as he and the club have sort of been at odds, maybe that sort of indicates sort of, I don't know, like a break between the club and what was the heart and soul. You know, they've got to rediscover that. It doesn't really seem like it truly exists here. And that's a big job for anybody, let alone, you know, for Joseph Martinez as a single player, for the entire squad, for Gonzalo Pineda and his staff, for Carlos Bocanegra, for the entire organization. Darren Eel's now gone too. It definitely feels like this is one of the sort of knock-on points of being a club accustomed to sort of immediate, bright, blinding success, like best possible scenario, and then confronted by disappointment over and over and over and over. They got to refine themselves. They got to discover who they are in this next era, because it's not who they were in the Tata era, and they definitely don't want it to be who they have been as a team that's not going to make the playoffs. So what's the next step? Does it involve Joseph Martinez? We shall see. Any final thoughts here, Charlie, before we move on?
Nada.
Yeah, nada. I think it's kind of all been said.
Charlie only talks about playoff teams.
It's out in the open there. Well, let's talk about the playoffs here. I was looking at the 538 odds ahead of the weekend. We have one game on Friday, by the way. That's Montreal-Columbus, and then every other game's on Saturday. There are no Sunday games this week, so a nice Friday one for you. But I was looking at the 538 odds because we're getting to that point of the season. We are about a month to go or so, and there are 18 teams that have better than a 5% chance of making the playoffs. So, in other words, that actually have a chance of making it without a veritable miracle. You know, I guess Atlanta, Chicago, Vancouver, Colorado, and Toronto could all have that miracle. They all have more than a percentage, one percentage point chance of making it, but it ain't going to happen for them. So you have Seattle at 19%. Sorry about that, Anders. I know you're still dreaming up scenarios that would get your Sounders into the playoffs, but I don't think that's going to go down for you. 33% for Inter Miami, 40% for New England, 50 on Cincinnati, 51 for Portland, 66 for the Galaxy, which is interesting, 75 for Columbus, and 79 for RSL. And then after that, it's up to 89%. You'd assume all the teams above that are absolutely going in. Oh, and speaking of percentages, there is a 0% chance that David Goss is going to be with us for the remainder of the show. Apparently, you get married and your internet connection just goes to pot.
Gone.
He's gone. We cannot get him back. It's sad, but it is what it is. Let's take a look at week 30. Mano a mano, Charlie. Nashville Galaxy, 3:30 p.m. Eastern on Saturday. Again, one game Friday, the rest Saturday. What do we see on TuneIn and Twitter? It is the lone national TV game this weekend. Nashville currently in the fourth spot in the West. They would host Minnesota, the fifth seed, if the playoffs started today. The Galaxy are out. They're not in there. We'll talk about Nashville more in just a second, because it feels like they've come back to their original 2022 expectations, which was to be a cup contender. And there for a while was like, man, can this team, are they going to make the playoffs? Like, they can't even get a result at home. That's how bad things are going for them. But they've turned things around pretty spectacularly. But it's going to be a tough one for the Galaxy. They have four DNQs in the last 5 years when it comes to the playoffs. This is not the juggernaut that they used to be. Like, I can't even say like those days are recent. Those days are long gone. 2014 is nearing on a decade ago. Greg Vanney had a meeting with his leaders this weekend, reportedly. There are some big questions. One, who should even be on the field? Two, how would you set this team up to have success, to turn this around, to get into the playoffs? And then three, assuming they don't make the playoffs, even though I guess 538 is saying they got a better than 50-50 shot, which I have a hard time understanding, what would it mean if they don't get there? Let's start with the setup part. For you, how should this team be playing? Who should be on the field?
Well, let's start with they should not be in a back three, because I don't think their center backs are good enough to be in a back three. And I know Goss was on here earlier and he was like, we got to be in a back three, play with the wing backs. And
this is before his internet died, unfortunately.
This is before the internet went out. Yeah. That for me, that's not the way.
The internet god said no back three.
Yes. I think their back four defensively has struggled. And Bond has been good, but he's also been bad. I think he's just been inconsistent.
It's not been his best season from an analytics perspective.
And it's not as bad as Toronto, but it's not good. And so I think you have to be in a back four. I think Mark Delgado has to be on the field for this team. And Jovalich, from the way he's producing, he's effective. You need to score goals. Chicharito is a goal scorer, and he's proven himself to, one, make good runs still. He's still very, very talented at, one, making good runs, and two, finishing. He can also provide. The Revolution game, he's the one who plays the through ball. I think there's a way that Jovalich and Chicharito can coexist at the same time. So you figure out a way to have him on the pitch. And Victor Vasquez, yes, he's gifted, but he can't move. So if I'm a coach, I have a talented youngster in Efra Alvarez, and people say, hey, can he play 90 minutes consecutively? Go out and put him on the field and make him have to be fit and make him have to show up and be healthy. And I think that's the best way for this Galaxy team to move forward, because it's no coincidence that you had one of the greatest strikers of all time, Zlatan Ibrahimovic, single-handedly point him out, saying, hey, this guy is class. If you're talking about a youngster with a lot of talent and a lot of ability and potential, play this kid, because he has something that others don't in terms of how he thinks while he's playing and the actual quality that he has with his touches. And so,
can I just
also talking to other Galaxy players, they say, he's the truth.
They've been saying that. Galaxy guy's been saying that since preseason. So if we're playing this out, so you're basically saying you got a 4-man back line. It's Edwards, it's Williams, it's Koulibaly, and it's Araujo. You're getting width from your fullbacks, and then I would say it's Delgado and Brugman providing some sort of protection for those center backs in transition moments, and then connecting to and giving freedom to Ricky Puig and Alvarez, and they sort of have freedom to, you know, to drift into those channels, to drift into the soft spots, get in between the lines. They're trying to receive the ball in a position to turn and either play a fullback in to cross, or then you have Jovalich and Chicharito up top. So you're saying, like, I don't know if it's a diamond, I don't know if it's a box, I don't know exactly how you would describe the shape, but structure comes from the back two, creativity and link play comes from the front two, and then you have two strikers up top that, frankly, seem to play pretty well together.
What I would say is, balance is the word that comes to mind when you're talking about this formation, because if you do play Mark Delgado as your wide right midfielder, who naturally is always going to tend to come inside, you know that Julian Araujo is going to provide the width. He's going to get up and down. He'll be that player who will get down, but you need to have cover. So then that shifts out one player. Then Delgado obviously has to shift to cover the central part of the back line, because Koulibaly will shift over, Williams will shift over. And Raheem Edwards, as good as he is going forward, I think defensively there can be concerns, because I think he puts himself in bad positions.
That's both fullbacks, if we're being honest.
Right. But if you're saying who's more defensive-minded, I'd say Chase Gasper is more defensive-minded than Raheem Edwards. Raheem Edwards gives you a little bit more going forward. So it's almost, are we looking to defend more in this game, or are we looking to be on the front foot more in this game? So I think there's ability to change and swap those two players. But in terms of players you know you need on the pitch who are going to give you something, Jovalich has to be on the pitch. Chicharito, at this point, has to be on the pitch. And I think Ricky Puig is one of those players who comes in, has settled in pretty well. I think everyone now knows that, yeah, that there's a reason why people were so hyped about this player, because he is gifted. He will succeed if he's surrounded with the right players. So I think Efra Alvarez is the one player that they need to figure out how to get him on the pitch.
Hey, this feels like a very advantageous moment for Nashville to face the Galaxy.
Yes.
The Galaxy have to go after 3 points. I mean, they have to go after it. Like, they've got it.
Nashville says, come.
And Nashville's like, hello, would you like to push forward? Like, yes, sin yes. numbers. Those fullbacks? Oh, yes, put them forward. Put Hani Mukhtar in a 1v1 situation against Derek Williams or Sekou Koulibaly. Let's see how that works out for you. They are going to counter them to death. They're going to think on set pieces. We are going to have the advantage here. And this is what Nashville was supposed to be this whole season. It just never quite came off. I'm excited for Nashville, and I think you sort of hit the nail on the head in the CCL discussion, to have like sort of rediscovered what it is that made them so good at times, and if they could be consistent with it, make them a very difficult team to play against, both defensively and defending their attack.
Shout out to all my Nashville supporters out there. You know, I love that defensive setup. But I will say this too. We talked about Paolo Nakamura being relieved from his duty as head coach for Houston because of what's the future look like? What is our identity? You haven't given us that identity. Well, I'd say Greg Vanney's in the same boat. What is our future? How are we set up? The tactics are changing left and right. So if you're a Galaxy supporter, you're saying, hey, I don't know what our lineup is from match to match. I can tell you one thing. Jovalich is produced. When he's played, my man's produced. Why is there not a certain position for him? Why is there so many questions being asked of this group and how they're playing in tactics and positions? Because for me, you don't know what you're going to get. How is Efra Alvarez not being fulfilled?
Like, you can put a lot of it on Efra's feet of like his lack of development, playing time, production. But yeah. Also, as a club, you have to get more out of that player, right?
Like 100%.
It's also your responsibility. That's a player you sell. Yeah, it's also your responsibility for a lot of money. The health of the club. Both first 100%. Yeah, either way. Big game there on Univision and Tudiane and on Twitter. We'll see what goes down there. How about keeping the Western Conference here? Sounders are hosting Austin. Sounders are out. Sounders percentage chance, 19%. So, hey, you're saying there is a chance. Austin are the second seed, but they've lost 3 times in 4 games. Now, the one non-loss was a win against LAFC, 8 p.m. Eastern, ESPN+. Are you concerned at all about Austin? Or is this a blip, like a correction to their overperformance on the analytics from the remainder of the year? Because they were overperforming. Like, that was
the
underlying numbers, at least.
I never thought they were elite. I thought they were a very good team. I never thought they were elite out of this world, LAFC, Philadelphia Union. But I'm not concerned. They're coached well. Josh Wolf, I think he's really dialed in to his team, to his tactics. They know who they are.
They do have an identity.
They have
for
it.
Sure. Yeah.
They got it. So not worried at all.
I would be a tad worried if I was Austin, just about like sort of the openness of games and the lack of production when Driussi's not firing and Diego Fagundes isn't on, because outside of that, it's too hot cold. I mean, what can Rigoni be? That's, I think, the biggest question that they have the rest of the way. And then two, when it hits playoff time, are they going to be able to sort of make the game more compact and keep it from opening up and being a little track meet-like, which it can be when they play? Mm-hmm. Because when it gets open, those center backs struggle in 1v1 situations. So the things I'd be watching for Austin the rest of the year are, when it's time to sort of close the game down a little bit and make it more pragmatic, can they do it in that setup? Can Driussi and Fagundes still be difference makers? Can they get a forward or a third option hot, whether that's Finlay or Rigoni or Aruti or whoever? And then can they protect their center backs? Don't give me that on a Aruti. He's the ultimate microwave
said,
man.
You
dude.
Said Finley he's Gareth Bale.
I'm not saying he's Gareth Bale, but like, you know, if they can get him in it. Positions to cross, that's where Driussi's sort of been that second runner. But they've got to find a consistent third option and get informed the rest of the way, because it's not there right now. Seattle, this is it, man. You've never missed the playoffs. You're at home. Oof. This is it. Anders, put in the chat. Sweating. Put in the chat, Anders. Are they in or not? Tell us, Anders. I'm shaking up the eight ball. Anders says 100% in. Take that, 538. Take that. Right now, they're 6 points out, but they have a game in hand on Portland.
The belief is strong with that one.
The belief is very strong. All right, let's keep it rolling. Dallas hosting LAFC. Really good week in the Western Conference, 8:30 p.m. Eastern. Dallas currently the third seed. They would host RSL if the playoffs started today. LAFC, of course, would be the top seed. They'd have a bye. LAFC are going to have to win the Shield on the road just based on their remaining schedule, if they want to indeed get this thing, you know, at Dallas, at Minnesota, at Portland, they got Nashville at home and Houston at home. Those are games that they would hope to win. Nashville would be a little tougher than otherwise you would think. Any concern with LAFC? We just hit the concern meter on Austin, but three losses in the last four, but they just beat RSL. Is all okay for LAFC, or have they sort of come back down to the pack, whereas it seemed like for a while it was just like them and the rest of the league?
Not worried at all with LAFC either.
Are they head and shoulders above the West, or has the playing field evened out?
No, they're head and shoulders above the West. But
talent wise, I agree with you.
Yes. But what I would tell you is in a one game scenario in the playoffs, we know how this works. If you have a phenomenal game plan and you execute, Houston winning at home against LAFC, San Jose winning, those games are what gives everyone hope. Austin smacking them 4-1. That was a match where not only Austin saying, hey, we can play with them. But not only that, we're better than them when we play well. So for all the Western Conference teams, they go, okay, what's the blueprint? San Jose, Houston, Austin. Let's watch those matches. Let's see how they get broken down. Then we have to be super sharp on that day. You can beat LAFC. They're not unbeatable, but I will say, yes, they are head and shoulders above everyone. When you look at that roster and you start, I think for Toronto, it's who plays and where do they play?
I was going to say.
Because right now, what's it's just the right figuring mix? Out, and fine-tuning
can,
this group.
And can you find the right mix when there's a lot of considerations like Gareth Bale going to the World Cup and the fact that he may not be there long-term? The fact that Bale and Vela don't seem to fit that well together, that Vela doesn't seem like the sort of singular attacking, you know, like player that can dominate a game and win on his own. Like, huh, what's the best mix? It's Arango up top for me, and then outside
Puanga
of that, it's
damn good. I'll tell you that, too.
And look, their most effective minute-on-minute player might be Mahala, like from an attacking perspective. It's a big question for Steve Trundolo, and that's what the rest of the season represents. Like, what's your best mix? How do you get your personalities in line? And how do you get them all sort of like primed for a playoff run? Because Shield or no Shield, man, it's about MLS Cup for them. Union would love a Shield. Another one for them, though. They got Orlando City this weekend. Orlando City would be the 5 seed right now. They'd go to NYCFC. Philly obviously would have the bye. They're competing for the Supporters Shield. Just a hell of a job by the Union and by Jim Curtin. It just keeps getting better for them. But I want to throw Montreal Columbus Crew at you on Saturday, 7:30 p.m. Eastern, ESPN+. Montreal are the 2 seed. They'd host Cincy as it stands. Crew would go to the Red Bulls as a 6 seed. And Nathan Maynard says, I'm legitimately concerned about the Crew making the playoffs. No offense recently, 4 of 6 away, congested schedule. By Tuesday, it's easy to see them below the line with a loss at Montreal and at Miami. Do you still feel like they're more than likely than not to make it in?
Yes. I see the Crew in the playoffs.
3-2-8 on the road. At Montreal, that's no cakewalk.
No, it's not.
And Miami are desperate. They're clawing. Miami have been good at home, 8-3-3.
I like their chances.
You like their chances?
Yes. Okay. I would say, yeah, it's not going to be easy, but I like their chances to get in.
Same. I hope we get both Ohio teams, to be honest with you. Other big ones here, Red Bulls, New England, 6 Eastern. New England are out right now. Obviously, Red Bulls would be hosting the Crew. Mike Kennedy hit us up and said the best goalkeeper in MLS is Petrick, period. Georgi Petrovic, I think that's a fair take. I think he is the best goalkeeper in MLS right now.
How can you say that?
I guess Andre Blake.
Yeah, Andre Blake is going to take his glove off.
How about this? Time out. The most influential goalkeeper in MLS right now, because I think he has more to do to get his team in the position that they want to be in, which is in the playoffs, than Blake does in holding on to the top spot.
It's like, nope, still Blake.
Okay,
but,
fine.
But I will say this. Georgi Petrovic is the real deal and is automatically already cemented himself as a top three goalkeeper in this league. I'd say two at this point. He is just so sound in terms of his technique, his ability, the shots that he has saved, he's phenomenal. For me, he is the second best goalkeeper in MLS right now. With Andre Blake being the first, because you're talking about
I think you're right. I think I've come to take Andre Blake completely for granted. Is I think what's happening.
I'm proud of you for saying that.
I admit it.
Me not joke with ya. You're Jamaican from the heart. Okay.
Okay.
Bless up.
All right. Before we get out of here, a couple things. A dog says, how do Houston and San Jose get out of the basement? I think San Jose is starting to address that, but they'll have to figure out some things on the transfer side. Lucci's a good start for them. Houston have a lot more work to do. If you didn't hear the Naga discussion from Tuesday, Doyle and I dug into that. We also talked about it on Power Rankings. Chapito says, what are the chances that Bielsa gets hired for the Dynamo head coaching job next season? Historical city, active owners, renovations for the club left and right, and soccer everywhere. I think you should not plan on Bielsa being your manager, Dynamo fans, but I am curious to hear what you have to say about Houston and the managerial change, Charlie.
Well, you got to think about the community. You also have to think about a DP, a certain DP, Mexican DP, that will have an influence on the next coach. I wouldn't be surprised if it is a Mexican head coach. I would not be surprised. If it's someone who will get the most out of their players who are primarily speaking Spanish-speaking players, and someone who will get the most out of this group. So,
did you think
Ache is someone who knows a lot of different coaches, who has has the influence to attract a top coach as well. So, Pat On said he's been around the league. He's seen it all. I would not be surprised if he goes, he really goes outside the box and this time hires a coach who has experience versus hiring Nagamura, who did not have experience, who is a young coach with a lot of enthusiasm and someone who was hoping to come in and make a big difference. But you need a coach who will have the club kind of have that stamp on the pitch, an identity. The Houston way, this is how we're playing.
Who's settled in who they are as a manager and has a track record of doing it.
Not trying to figure it out on the fly.
Yeah. I mean, given their history, that's probably what they needed. It was a risk, I think, to go with Nagamura, and I still think he could be a really good head coach down the line, but this was not the right mix for him. So, we'll see. All the coverage, MLSsoccer.com. And the MLS app from this weekend's action. We'll end on this one. The National Soccer Hall of Fame ballot is out. I am on a number of committees there, and I'm part of the voting pool. Three players. I know you hate this. Three players will get in.
Not at all.
Or max three players will get in. But I think for sure three players will get in this year on the player ballot. I'm gonna make a prediction right now that those players are obviously Landon Donovan. I mean, that's just a complete no-brainer. That Landon would make this list. DeMarcus Beasley is a deserving first ballot as well. I think he will be there. And I will predict that Lauren Cheney-Holiday will also be there, and she absolutely deserves it. I've been stumping for her for a couple of years now. It's a numbers game a lot of times, and we have people like Hope Solo. It's hard to fit her in, but I think those three should get in. But I would put this to you, Charlie, because we have a list of very deserving people. I think there should be an MLS Hall of Fame, because here are people that I don't think have any chance of getting in this year. Shalree Joseph, MLS Hall of Famer, for sure. Robbie Keane, MLS Hall of Famer. Pablo Mascherini, MLS Hall of Famer, arguably National Soccer Hall of Fame on his national team contributions as well. Nick Raimondo, MLS Hall of Famer. David Beckham, MLS Hall of Famer. Brian Ching, I would say MLS Hall of Famer, given the success he had in Houston. Dwayne DeRosario, no doubt, better shut your mouth, put that man in the Hall of Fame, Hall of Famer, MLS terms. Thierry Henry, Hall of Famer. Eddie Johnson, arguably MLS Hall of Famer as well. Do we need an MLS Hall of Fame?
Do you say, okay. I think an MLS Hall of Fame would be awesome. Where would you put that MLS Hall of Fame?
I mean, I think in an ideal world, it would be with the National Soccer Hall of Fame. You have sort of a double dip. Okay. It's like, hey, there's different wings of this thing, because the National Soccer Hall of Fame at this point, I think, is going to trend heavily toward honoring national team players who've done a lot at that level, including MLS and their clubs as well. And it's been awesome to see guys like Echeverry and Jaime Moreno get in. But I just think the numbers game is going to get tough for them. I would love to see both. I would also love to see wings for somebody like Josh McKinney, who has accomplished an incredible amount for the U.S., was a longtime captain, was a guy that, you know, put his stamp on the game here, but nobody necessarily knows his name in a like a mainstream sense because he was a Paralympics national teamer. But he captained the team 70-plus times, has 124 caps, played in Copa Americas. Like, that's a guy that should be in the National Soccer Hall of Fame. And I still, as a committee member and a voter, I still just push and push and push to honor more. I just think that we have a lot of deserving candidates. If you don't honor your history, you forget your history. And I don't want that to be a part of the legacy that we have here as we grow the game in this country. So we'll end on that one. I would love to see some of those guys get in, the Shaw Rees of the world and... you know, the Nick Raimondos and others that have, Dwayne certainly, that have contributed so much. Speaking of that, I think we have Dwayne Durisario, the interview you and I did with him at the All-Star game next week on this feed on Wednesday. So that'll be a real treat for everybody. He told some stories, Charlie. What did he say afterwards? No, 2 weeks, Anders says. Told some stories that he said, boy, you guys got a lot out of me. Didn't think I was going to say that much. We had a lot of laughter. A lot of insider banter. So September 21st, says Anders, is when that comes out, and a reminder to go
beautiful.
Listen to the Greg Berhalter interview we did as well. It's in the podcast feed as well as YouTube. That's it for us. Hopefully Dave's married life doesn't equal terrible internet forever, but we'll try to get that fixed. But we'll see you on Monday, everybody. Adios.